Oh, it started? Well, then let me start. Hey, I'm just here so I don't get fined.
Playoffs? What are you talking about? Playoffs? You kidding me? Playoffs?
I know it's been, 15 years since the Bills made the playoffs. Well, get ready, man. We're going.
Full start. Everyone but the center. Offense. 5-yard penalty.
I said, are you strong? They said, I'm strong. Are you strong? So I said, we're strong, man.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6!
And we are live on Blog Talk Radio for Falcon Zone. I'm your host, Jeremy the Impact York. Reggie will join us a little bit later, which, I think he's gathering his thoughts because it wasn't the best of outcomes for him. But joining me are Cody Elias from 95.7 The Game Bay Area and the coach, Haywood Hill. How we doing, guys?
Good, Jeremy. What's going on?
It's been interesting over on the East Coast, and we'll get into how the West Coast reacted here in a minute. But, obviously we're gonna get into the Super Bowl here in a second. Obviously we're going to talk about some of the league news. I do find it kind of interesting, Cody, that, your team being the 49ers out that way and us covering the Falcons here, that we actually have this common link, and there's two completely different reactions to Kyle Shanahan right now.
Yeah, after today, the press conference, his introductory press conference with John Lynch, he won the press conference out here. People are starting to, I don't want to say people are falling in love with him, but he said all the right things. He looked very eloquent up there. He kind of looked like his dad, looks like a younger version of his dad. He just looks the part, and he sounds ready to go. Him and John Lynch sound like they're on the same page, but I can imagine what people in Atlanta are feeling after, what happened in the Super Bowl and, Shanahan's leaving the next day. But as of right now, everyone out here is just they're enamored with Kyle Shanahan.
Well, I think he won his exit press conference here in Atlanta, too, because he said, I am leaving, and we didn't let him finish at that point. We actually loaded the last boxes on the truck and sent him on out your way.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, it was a really crappy way how it ended. With the way the Super Bowl turned out, and he was asked about that, the play calling thing and everything, and he answered it very well, so he's going to think about it every day the rest of his life for what happened. But we're happy to have him. This is not going to be a one-year project on the turnaround of the 49ers. It's going to take several years, but he seems like the right guy for the part. But let's just hope he can get it done. And just another example of the 49ers thought they had the right guy, and he flamed out too quickly, or he doesn't meet the part that Jed York and the Niners wanted.
Yeah, absolutely. And, most of that is in jest. A lot of people here in the Atlanta area really do wish Kyle the best of luck, and especially the 49ers. I mean, I hope that him and Lynch are the guys that kind of turn them around. Coach, what do you think about Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch running the ship out in San Francisco now?
I find it to be quite intriguing, the fact that both of them are going to be in rookie situations. Lynch being a first-time GM, as well as Kyle Shanahan becoming a first-time head coach. I think that if the organization is going to allow them the opportunity to deal, I think they'll be okay. But I think, again, I'm going to roll my dice and say they're going to give them about 3 years tops to turn the organization around, the both of them. And if not, then you're going to see a changing of the guard. When it comes to Shanahan, the question mark that is going to be over his head for quite some time is if he's really head coaching material. It's one thing to be a coordinator. It's another thing to put head in front of that name. And if you notice on the coaching staff, you only have one of those individuals. So, again, it's going to be very interesting to see. It's not just saying the right things because you have a director of media relations that will help you with all of that. It's what you're going to do once you assume the role and how fast you can get things done. Coming off a season like Atlanta did, and with him being the offensive coordinator, as well as the way that the Super Bowl ended, he has a lot to prove right now in San Francisco. Right now it's the honeymoon stage, but I give you guys about a year, 2 years, or two seasons, and at that point, that discussion will begin to form itself either as a positive or a negative.
Yeah, exactly. And, Cody, it's kind of a two-part question. First part, what are you guys hearing out that way as far as maybe his quarterback decision? I know he's got a little bit of time to figure that out. And then ultimately, as a Niners fan, who do you want him to go get?
Well, you know, Coach Shanahan was asked that question today by one of the local Bay Area reporters, and he answered the question. I thought very, you know, he handled it very well, and he wasn't gonna tip his hand on what he wanted to do with the quarterback. He pretty much said, you know, you want the best player possible. You know, everybody wants the best quarterback in the league. He has no exact answer. You have to look at all the options and people, you know. It looks like he might be willing to give Colin Kaepernick a chance. I'm kind of interested to see how Colin Kaepernick would work in his system that he has. You know, a lot of people want them to draft a quarterback. A lot of people are enamored with Mitch Trubisky from North Carolina. Personally, I like Deshaun Watson after how he performed in the national championship against Alabama. That's who Todd McShay has the Niners taking in his latest mock draft. I wouldn't mind them trying to give Colin Kaepernick another look. Colin Kaepernick kind of grew on me last year. He played really well in Chip Kelly's system. But, yeah, Coach Shanahan didn't really give – he didn't really, like I said, didn't tip his hand on who he wanted to for his quarterback. I think it's because they're still in the finding out stage, and he's so early in the process, and he's so far behind because he's still putting his staff together. And John Lynch is still trying to figure everything out. This is his first time GM. But from everything so far, just from what people I've gathered from, you know, listening to fans and just, you know, other 49 people I've known, like something about people want them to sounds like the first choice is either Jimmy Garoppolo or Kirk Cousins or draft someone. Doesn't sound like there's a lot of favoritism towards keeping Colin Kaepernick as of right now.
Let me just throw this name out there. It's kind of the under-the-radar dark horse. Not a whole lot of people are saying it, but for what you could probably get him for, Mike Glennon, I think, could be the stopgap until you could develop the guy you wanted, because obviously Blaine Gabbert's not your answer. Christian Ponder never saw the field. I don't know if his contract ran out or not. So, I mean, if I'm Shanahan, Mike Glennon's a big, tall, strong-armed kid who has limited miles on the tires, so to say, and also he's not too bad at scrambling out, because when he actually did start in Tampa, he had to run a lot.
Yeah, no, I've actually always been a fan of Mike Glennon. I like his upside. You know, the big frame was he like 6'5 or 6'6, possibly maybe 6'7. He's a strong arm. I thought he played well when he filled in for Tampa. He wouldn't be a bad option if they need a stopgap. A lot of you guys know this guy all too well, but a name that keeps getting rumored for Shanahan is Matt Pick-Six Schaub. It seems like Schaub seems to be a guy that a lot of people, you know, think that Shanahan could bring here to be a stopgap. I'd rather them go out and sign and bring back Ty Detmer or Tim Rattay if you're going to go that direction. But Schaub seems to be like a guy that's linked because of Shanahan's days with him in Houston and then now with him being in Atlanta. But I think you got to avoid a veteran like Schaub. I mean, he'd be a good guy to come in to mentor a young guy, but you don't want him being your starter. But I like the idea of Mike Glennon, because the other name that's getting tossed around there is Jay Cutler from Chicago, because of the days in Denver with Kyle working with him and his dad, Mike, when they drafted Jay coming out of Vanderbilt back in 2005.
Yeah, I had heard that about Matt Schaub, that he could follow him to the Niners. You know, Coach, when you took over as a head coach in your career, what was the first few things that you tried to get established? I mean, obviously you got to build your coaching staff, but, you know, what are the first things you were really looking at?
Well, I mean, the first thing you want to do is get your coaching staff put together, because, again, that's going to be very important as to how you put the rest of the team together. Once you establish that, then you want to most definitely look at the intricate parts of the team: quarterback, centers, running backs, receivers on the offensive side of the ball, as well as on the defense side of the ball. You want to look at your middle linebackers, defensive ends, and corners. So, again, I was listening to you guys talk, and I think Matt Schaub will end up in San Francisco for that very reason. Again, you must understand that they have to start winning now. They don't have to have a 10-game winning season, but they have to start turning some things around now. And right now, Kyle does not have the experience, nor does he have the time to take a quarterback and develop him and produce those games. So I think that Schaub will end up there. As a matter of fact, it's probably a no-brainer that Schaub will be there. Colin Kaepernick is going to probably go back and get that second look, as you spoke of earlier. But that again is one of those things where he has to have some sense of a soft place to land with a quarterback that understands the system now. And that was the safety valve that they had even with Matt Ryan. If he went down any time in Atlanta, as if you remember, they opened up with Schaub and was calling for Matt early in the season and trying to replace him with Schaub. You know, it was that little riff in the beginning of Atlanta season this year. So look for Schaub to be there. Look for him to go into the role as mentoring, but also knowing in the back of Coach Shanahan's mind that he has someone that knows the system now, and he can't afford a season or two to teach him that and still be productive.
Yeah, I could definitely see that too. Now, of course, there's a quarterback who, unfortunately, they're not going to be able to reach out to. I don't know if he would have really fit the system anyway, but you know, we heard earlier in the week that Michael Vick has decided to retire, and obviously, we know what he kind of means over here to us in Atlanta. But Cody, at least out in the Bay Area and just in your short life to this point, what does Michael Vick mean to you? Is he still like the big superstar that we think he is here in Atlanta, or like the cultural icon, or is he just the ultimate character on Madden?
As someone that grew up loving Mike Vick coming out of Vautech and you know, then getting drafted by the Falcons, with Vick, I think he transcended the quarterback position. He was kind of like Randall Cunningham, but he had a little – I mean, he was left-handed, and he had the strong arm, and he could do all the – you know, he could do everything. He was rushing for 1,000 yards, and, you know, his career was trending upward. He had Atlanta going the right direction, and, you know, unfortunately, the whole dog-fighting stuff happened. You know, that all occurred, and, you know, those atrocities that he did. But, you know, the guy turned his life around. He went to Philly, had a great year with Philly with Andy Reid. Got the second $100 million contract, which is incredible that he got a second $100 million contract. And then, you know, started deteriorating a little bit, and then he ends up with the Steelers last year. And you know, I'm not a big Steeler guy, but I've always been a big fan of Mike Vick. I like the way he transcended the game. I was disappointed to see that he retired. You know, that how his career was kind of put on hold for what happened and how he spent a couple of years in prison. But the guy changed the game clearly. Back in the day, Michael Vick was the guy you wanted, and if you're a Madden player, you were always Atlanta because you weren't going to lose because you just run the whole time with Mike Vick. And if he didn't, you throw the ball deep to Brian Finneran, who, believe it or not, when we had him on the show a few times as a guest, he always tells a story how he's on the All-Decade team, the All-Madden Decade team, as the second starting wide receiver with Randy Moss, and he beat out other guys like Torrey Holt and some of the T.O. and some of the other receivers of the 2000s that were big names because of Mike Vick making him so good on there for his ability to jump in the end zone. So, you know, disappointing to see, but, you know, Vick transcended the game, and I'm happy to see, you know, his life got turned around and, you know, things are going good for him now.
Absolutely. And then, obviously, Coach, what did Michael Vick and his career mean to you?
Oh, I mean, by far, he epitomized the position. I don't think there has ever been a quarterback that has been so exciting as a Mike Vick. But one thing I like to say is that I felt that he still had a lot of time left. I think the reality check came when you had Cleveland that was just basically decimated with their situation at quarterback, and he didn't get a call after Pittsburgh. I think that's where reality, you know, kind of came into fruition for him. But in my personal opinion, as I watch an athlete like Vick, and, you know, as coaches, we don't fall in love with athletes. We kind of just look at it from a stock perspective. I do feel that, you know, he most definitely could have gone to Cleveland this year and played, or he could have easily gone to Jacksonville this year and played. And because he didn't get a call from either team during the course of the season, more especially Cleveland being the top tier of those two teams that I speak of, I still feel that if you were to match him against any of the other teams that basically did not have great records this year, he could most definitely be a 32, in my opinion, even now.
Yeah, I've always kind of sided with you on that I always thought he had a little more air in the tires, so to say. And, you know, unfortunately, he's decided to hang him up. But fortunately, that means, I would imagine, Arthur's going to find a place for him somewhere in the Falcons organization. The ovation he got when he came back a few weeks ago was, I think it told the tale that most of the Atlanta and most of the Falcons fan base has gotten over the whole dogfighting thing. He served his time for that. As far as we're concerned, we're going to move on. But in moving on, Pat McAfee is actually going to retire. I believe he's only 28 or 29. He is the eccentric punter for the Indianapolis Colts. I guess that means Mr. King out in Oakland is my new favorite punter. I'm sure he'll be ecstatic to hear that. But Pat McAfee is actually going to start working for Barstool Sports. And Barstool Sports has become an emerging football media outlet, and they do a lot of other stuff as well. In fact, they some of their members did a sit-in because of Deflategate up at the league office, which all the league did was not allow them on media row at the Super Bowl, and pretty much the guy that cuts the grass outside can get a pass in media row for the Super Bowl. So, I mean, what do you guys think about McAfee retiring? And then obviously his connection to Barstool Sports now, where he's going to run pretty much the Indianapolis office.
Well, I think that with the situation, is he retiring due to injury? I'm not quite sure what was driving the actual retirement. You know, he is relatively young, and, you know, punters and kickers can still go a long time. So I'm not quite sure if it was an injury or if he's just wanting to get out of football at this point. I do find it interesting, though, that he's going into a controversial type of situation with Barstools, considering what happened with them and what you mentioned about the Super Bowl. But I do think that he brings something valuable to the table from a player's perspective. And coming out of an organization like Indianapolis, he most definitely will have a lot of inside track as he writes those blogs. And I do wish him good luck in his new venture.
And I think we have a bad connection with Cody. We'll try to get him back on. Yeah, I don't think it was necessarily a injury or anything like that. I think he just wanted to move on to a different venture in his life. He kind of got tired of kicking footballs, I think. And I think Cody's back on with us. Cody, what do you think of Pat McAfee's retirement?
You know, I think we discussed this a little bit last week after we got done with the Super Bowl, but. You know, I'm a big Pat McAfee guy. He's a Western Pennsylvania guy, so I got to watch him play. Because we're around the same age. McAfee's only a year older than I am. So I got to watch Pat actually play when he played in Western PA when I still lived there. I think he might have made the right decision. He figured, you know, he made his millions. He's 29. He wants to get out. He's a traveling comedian. He makes people laugh. People love him. Marquette King's even told me that he's one of the funniest guys. You know, he's one of the funniest guys he's ever met. He does a great job being a comedian. And joining Barstool, that's a huge get for them, especially – after everything, you know, like you mentioned about them not being able to get accreditation for the Super Bowl, and, you know, that whole story is very fascinating to me because McAfee, like, it was right after, the media day started. I'm like, okay, maybe McAfee will get credentialed to join the press row from Radio Row, and that'd be really interesting to see him out there interviewing players from the Patriots and Falcons after a guy that just retired for Barstool Sports. But I think it's just a case of him, you know, he made his money. He wants to maybe avoid getting, you know, having an injury, you know, concussions, because you see a lot of guys retiring early. It's, you know, because they're afraid of, you know, brain injuries and everything. I know he's a punter, but you never know. Brian Moorman got lit up before by Sean Taylor. I mean, he turned okay, but, you know, maybe he didn't want to risk a major injury being so young. So he made the right decision, and I'm with you. I think Marquette King now is the most electrifying punter in football, which you don't talk about punters being electrifying, but Marquette King is a character, and he's also very talented at what he does. So I'm happy for Pat McAfee, not because he's a Western Pennsylvania guy. Just, I think he made the right choice. He made his money. Now he wants to do what he truly loves, and that's making people laugh.
Absolutely. And we're going to try to jump through these last few things real quick because we want to talk Super Bowl before we get out of here. You know, the Hall of Fame candidates were announced, and this year, I mean, I can't argue with any of the ones they have on here. Obviously, safety Kenny Easley, and Jerry Jones being appointed as the ones past their as either contributors or the ones past the 15 years or whatever. But local favorite here, Morton Anderson's getting in. Kurt Warner finally gets his due. Terrell Davis with Damian Tomlinson and Jason Taylor. Which ones of those really stick out to you guys? Coach, I'll start with you.
I think LaDainian Tomlinson stands out to me as well as Kurt Warner because of his journey throughout the NFL. I think those are the two that stand out the most to me right now. Jason Taylor, again, was prolific when he was in Miami. But, you know, those are the two. I think Taylor with his running ability and that style that he brought during the time that he played the game. And then just Kurt as a journeyman coming from arena football right into, you know, going into the Rams and winning some Super Bowls. Those are the two guys that stand out the most to me.
All right, Cody?
You know, Coach, you're right. I agree about Kurt Warner. You know, Kurt Cummings was a guy that was bagging groceries before he, you know, before the Rams called him to come play for them. And then he won an MVP and won a Super Bowl. He's a great story. Actually, Kurt was on the show with us today. He shared, you know, the moment when he finally he's going to be a Hall of Famer, the whole process, everything that happened Saturday night, and you know how all that went down. And then you know we got his thoughts on, everything about you know who, people to get in, his thoughts on T.O. So he had a lot of really good stuff to say about the Hall of Fame and you know how much momentum getting in. The other surprise to me was Jason Taylor as well. Jason Taylor's a really good player. I don't think he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. I think maybe they should have put T.O. in before Jason Taylor. But, you know, he was going to get in. I just don't think he's a first ballot guy. And a little side note about LaDainian Tomlinson, Lorenzo Neal will actually be the person that inducts, you know, that introduces LT as the next running back and going into the Hall of Fame. We found that out this week. So that should be a good time. It looks like I might be getting to go to Canton for the Hall of Fame ceremony. We're probably, you know, going to be out there for that. So that was very exciting. I'm happy for Lowe and LT and all the guys who got in. But I'm going to have to go with Kurt Warner and Jason Taylor because Kurt Warner had a great career winning the Super Bowl, a couple MVPs, four-time Pro Bowler and all that. But I just think that a lot of people feel he didn't have the right, you know, he didn't have the numbers to get in. But, you know, the guy won, and that's all that matters.
Yeah, absolutely. And I remember hearing that. I was actually listening in when Lowe called back in and said that he would actually be the one inducting him, said that LT said, you always led, you know, led for me with all the blocks and stuff for all the bigger moments of his career, so I want you to lead me one more time. And I thought that was fantastic because, you know, a lot of people don't quite remember all the stuff Lorenzo Neal did, and the fullback position is still in the process of, it seems like, being forgotten, but Lowe is one of the best there was at that position, and for him to get the honor to get to induct his buddy like that, that's going to be a must-watch, and definitely we'll have to do some sort of live interactions or something if you do end up going with him, Cody.
Yeah, no, I agree, and this is funny because, I know Lowe well enough, right? We joke around with him about this, and it's funny because he'll laugh about it and everything, but, you know, you watch everything he did for LT during his career, in the year LT set the record for most touchdowns in a season. If you go back and watch the play where he scored his 28th rushing touchdown, if you watch the play, Lowe falls down on the goal line and misses the block, but LT still gets in the end zone. So when LT scores the touchdown, Lowe couldn't even really celebrate him because he fell down on the play. But, you know, LT knows how special a player Lowe was and how much he helped transcend his career. Because don't even look at LT. Just look at some of the guys that Lowe helped, become 1,000-yard rushers. You have LaRon McClain in Baltimore. You had Corey Dillon, a lot of guys, Eddie George, Adrian Morrell at the Jets. Who, yeah, if you don't watch the Jets in the late '90s, you have no idea who Adrian Morrell is. Lowe did a lot for a lot of guys. LT the most because of the years with San Diego, but that's a big honor for Lowe. I'm happy for him. I'm a little biased, but I think he should be in the Hall of Fame. I know fullbacks aren't in the Hall. Very many fullbacks are in the Hall of Fame. I think him and Moose Johnson deserve to be in. I think they both deserve to be there for what they did. Every guest that ever comes on, they all say the Lowe should be in the Hall of Fame. We had Laura Malloy on the other day, former Falcon defensive back and linebacker, and said that, you know, Lowe was trying to tell him, you know, you deserve in the Hall of Fame, and Lawyer, you know, cut him off and said, look, you deserve, pretty much said, like, you deserve to be in the Hall of Fame before we do. So that's one thing we've been trying to campaign is to get Lowe in because he's had the career to, you know, the numbers to do it throughout his career for what he's done. But it would be a really cool thing, and I'd love to, you know, help interact with you guys with what that whole process goes on in early August.
Definitely so, and you know, maybe over the summer or something, we'll try to get Lowe on here and talk more about it, and just remind everybody of some of the great things he's done on and off the field. Because, like I said, it's not just because you work with him every day, Cody, but Lorenzo Neal is one of the gems of the football world, and he gets forgotten a lot of times.
Also, remember the Music City Miracle. Lowe started that play. That was a forward pass. Mm-hmm. You know, I have a hard time about that. That was a forward pass, but you know, he started that play with Wycheck and Dyson, so.
Yep, absolutely. Like I said, I agree. It's a forward pass, and if he comes on, I will tell him just the same. That should go really well. I'll save that to the end when he's on. But to wrap up some of the league news, the Falcons are losing quarterback coach Matt LaFleur. He's going to be the offensive coordinator for the Rams. LaFleur is really kind of underrated, and I'm kind of glad he's getting his due. obviously with Sarkisian coming in, which is the next story, he's going to be the new offensive coordinator. It kind of came out of nowhere. A lot of people thought it would be Chip Kelly. I thought it would be kind of dumb not to hire Chip, but to change to a different system as soon as you get one that works. From what I'm hearing, Sark is going to pretty much run a more aggressive version of what Kyle Shanahan was doing.
Yeah, I think that the hiring of Sark was a great hire for Atlanta. I think that, you know, again, you have Julio Jones, who probably was in on those meetings. And you're bringing a coach that's accustomed to playing in those type of big games from a college level that would easily transition back into the pro. So I think that the hiring is a great hiring, and I think that the organization overall was very pleased. Probably more so Matt Ryan as well, because it's not a lot more that he's going to have to learn. It's just going to be more aggressive as to what he's already doing. So I think that was a great move in the aspect of getting him as an offensive coordinator.
You know, I've always liked Sark. You know, when he was coaching under Pete Carroll at USC, and then he used to be with the Raiders back in the early 2000s. So you know, he has some NFL tenure. But working under Pete Carroll, you know, there's the Dan Quinn connection there. Dan Quinn's going to trust him because, you know, Dan Quinn and Pete Carroll are so close. And, you know, he was a great coach at Washington. He turned them around, and now Chris Peterson is doing even bigger things with them. He, you know, had the falling out at USC with the whole drunken pep rally and all that stuff, and then he takes over to Alabama for Lane Kiffin. And it was just interesting because when the news broke the other day, I was like, you know, Sark's taking over? Then I realized the whole Dan Quinn connection and all that. He's good at helping develop quarterbacks. I think he can help Matt Ryan get even better. I don't know if he can really get much better than he was this last season. But it's a good move for Atlanta, and I'm with you, Jeremy, with Matt LaFleur. I think he's a very underrated guy. I think him and Sean McVay and what the Rams are doing, you know, they're building for the future, which can be a good thing. And then I believe LaFleur's brother, Mike, is now he's joining the 49ers coaching staff too. So it seems like every coach from the Falcons staff, besides Dan Quinn, is gone after the Super Bowl. So a lot of things turning around. A lot of things changed in Atlanta in a couple of days. But hiring Sark was a good first step to replace Kyle Shanahan.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, a shakeup needed to happen. And as we always know, I think Arthur Blank had a lot to do with it. A lot of times you go to your head coach and you say, either you shake it up or I will. And if the owner shakes it up, it usually means the head coach gets sent packing. So had to shake it up, had to get through all the stuff, and I actually like this staff a little better than the last one, so, you know, it'll be fun to get to see them. Maybe we'll make it to training camp this year and really see what we're gonna get cooking for us. But now, of course, we've danced around it as much as we can. We've kind of got it split up this way with the Super Bowl. We're going to kind of give the general overview thoughts, and then we'll circle back around with some of the specifics and some of the conspiracy theories, because the Patriots are involved, so you know there's obviously a lot of them out there. But overall, I thought it came down to kind of 3.5 things. Atlanta built up a big lead in the first half. In fact, the first three quarters, it seemed like they were playing the whole way they had all year long. I don't know what happened in the fourth. That's between Shanahan, God, and his mother, apparently, or something. I don't know. New England made the halftime adjustments. It took them till the fourth quarter, and obviously the play call as well, to kind of flip the script. And then since Atlanta didn't adjust to New England's halftime adjustments, they just kept playing the way they'd been playing the whole time pretty much. And you can't let Brady have a chance to beat you like that. And ultimately he does. And now he has five.
Okay. My thoughts from the game overall, I think that Atlanta did exactly what they needed to do to win this game. I actually predicted Atlanta to take it by 10. If you go all the way through the flow of the game and they kick the field goal at the end when they were in position to do so, they win it by 11. One of the things I feel in this particular with this game is that the year before, and if you remember, I talked about the Denver-Carolina game. I said you have to play the perfect game to beat Denver. And Atlanta played this. They dominated. I don't think it was ever a question in anyone's mind who was dominating this football game. But somewhere down the line, I think what was being forgotten is that their defense played 93 offensive plays that New England produced over the course of that game, and that was the turning factor. Again, you know, I don't think anybody predicted that Atlanta would lose this game when you're talking about something that had never been done in history with that type of margin of a game to come back to win. So, that, you know, there are some thoughts that are there, and I'm sure once we get to the particulars, we'll start digging up the bones, if you will. But, again, I think Atlanta played a phenomenal game, and whatever happened in that play calling was something that, again, we'll have to always fall on the shoulders of the head coach because, again, as I spoke earlier, there's only one person on that field at the end of the day that makes those type of decisions or cannot make those type of decisions, and that's your head coach.
You know, I think I agree with the coach about everything. You know, I actually think they're going to win the game 30-24. They end up winning 34-28, so they're still on by the margin of six. But, you know, the game, Atlanta looked so good. You know, I'm not going to lie. I kind of was like, all right, it's 21, you know, was it 21-0 or 21-3? And I was like, this game's over. I was like, I never should have counted out Tom Brady. I know to never count out Brady and Belichick, but I was like, I just think this game's over. And then, you know, halftime happens. It's like 35, 40 minutes with Lady Gaga's performance, and, you know, everything just turned around. You give Belichick that much time to scheme and make adjustments to how to slow things down. And, you know, I think the Falcons' defense just got worn down. They had the Patriots are on the field for about 70 or 80 plays opposed to the Falcons' 40-something plays. And, you know, the one thing that always got to me, and, you know, the play calling is a big thing, and, you know, everyone's going to go back and look at that. The 3rd-and-1 where they threw the ball instead of running to try to get the first down. And not kicking the field goal with Matt Bryant, who he's missed 3 field goals all year. Two of them were from 50 yards or more, and one was a field goal that was blocked. So under 50 yards, the guy was perfect all season long, and it was about a 35, 40-yard field goal. And you could have went up 11, pretty much sealed the game, and you don't kick it when you have one of the most accurate kickers in the league. I thought that was a little head-scratching, but I think the Falcons' defense just got tired in the game from being on the field so long. You know, if you look at the end of the game, the Patriots tie the game, and then you go right after the coin toss, and then the Patriots win the coin toss, so you don't even give a chance for your defense to rest. And Brady just picked them apart, and that's what he does. He's so diabolical on the field. He likes that he dissects things, and, you know, he's not going to beat you deep anymore. He's not that type of guy anymore, but he's going to throw it across, you know, over the middle. He's going to feed it to Edelman, who had a big game. He's going to get hit to tight ends and Martellus Bennett. And it's just incredible they did all this without Gronk, because Gronk was such a big part of their offense. But, you know, I think a guy that's still getting not getting enough notoriety from this is James White. I think he should have been the Super Bowl MVP for what he did with the 14 catches, the 100 yards rushing, the 3 touchdowns. The guy didn't have a rushing touchdown all year coming to the game, and he has a game-winning touchdown in the Super Bowl. So I feel bad for Atlanta. I thought they had the game wrapped up. I wanted to, you know, even though I picked the Patriots, I wanted to see Matty Ice and Dan Quinn get the job done. But, you know, as a 49ers fan, I got a little skeptical of what Kyle Shanahan did with this play calling towards late in the game, and, you know, cost him after Julio Jones tried to save him with some nice catches. But I think in the end, it was just the Falcons' defense got worn out by the Patriots' passing offense, and that's what Belichick and Brady, that's what they schemed to do in the second half. And ultimately, I think it was the downfall for the Falcons. And as you see, the entire the defensive coaching staff was fired or let go because of what happened. I don't put that all on them. Do you really expect to shut Brady down for 4 straight quarters? But, you know, time will tell if the Falcons can get back here. But it's heartbreaking in a way to see them blow such a big lead. And, you know, people are going to tie it into the Warriors blowing a 3-1 lead in the NBA Finals, and also the Cleveland Indians blowing a 3-1 lead in the World Series. I think this is a little bigger defeat because you're up 25 points in the Super Bowl. So, you know, it was heartbreaking to see Brady got his 5th. He's the greatest quarterback of all time. I think he's the greatest quarterback of all time, even 41 is 5th. So, but it was just very interesting to see how the game turned out, because I thought it was over, you know, going into halftime.
Yeah, and as we get into the specifics, you know, we'll start right with the whole communication. It looked like bad communication, lack of communication. We could tell between Matt Ryan, Kyle Shanahan, and Dan Quinn. Dan Quinn was in the middle of this whole thing, I believe. Kyle Shanahan's in the booth, but the whole fourth quarter, Matt Ryan is off by himself. His face is the color of the red jersey that they're wearing. And it just seemed like whatever was going on, he wasn't very happy about it. You don't see Matt Ryan do that very often. He just seemed to be off by himself. Everybody was leaving him alone. They kind of said it was bad communication. I know Dan Quinn, about halfway through the season, took over the defensive calls. So maybe his mind was a little elsewhere. But it seemed like he was the guy in the middle with Matt Ryan and Kyle Shanahan literally looking like they wanted to strangle each other.
Yeah, I agree, Jeremy. I think that, again, you must understand the responsibilities of a head coach, and I will quickly run those responsibilities down, guys. First and foremost, a head coach's job is to manage the football game. He is the one that decides if you're going for it on fourth down. He is the one that decides on whether or not you go for one or two points on your conversion. He's the one that decides if you're going to kick the onside kick. So, again, a head coach, and he's the only one that can make a challenge. So a head coach's job basically is to see, is to transcend the game from the standpoint of being a coach and to see everything in the totality of how the team is playing and the chemistry and all of that. And if you notice, when you looked at Coach Belichick in this game, he never once, even when the team was down, have a conversation with his offense or his defense coordinator. He really literally went to the units themselves and told them exactly what he wanted to have done, and that's what he did. And that was the difference in them being able to pull back. I don't think there was anything different in the scheme. I think Belichick keeps it simple. He expects for it to be simple, and they perfect it. I think what happened to Atlanta, again, is that they got tired. Their scheme worked. It was obvious that the scheme worked because when have you ever seen New England ever held to 9 points at any time anywhere in a game for that long? So it proved that, you know, they were willing to pass this torch along. But, again, you know, to turn that many points around in a quarter was unbelievable. I don't think anybody in the world that knows anything about American-style football would have said that Atlanta was going to lose that game, even when you factor in the fact that, you know, Brady and them made a great comeback. The way that the game was still structured and playing with a time clock still allows you to only run. You only needed 3 1-yard plays, and this game is over. It's literally over because now if you go back and remember the Super Bowl that the Rams were in, they literally ran out of time. I mentioned that a couple of weeks ago. So, again, I think that what happens here is that you had some bad communication probably going on between Ryan and Shanahan. But, again, Quinn should have taken a little more time and took a page out of the book of the great Nick Saban. You see, he did not even allow that situation to form for himself. He went ahead and allowed Coach Kiffin to go and focus on his new program. And maybe that might have been, should have been the case in Atlanta. I don't know how much Kyle Head was really in this game because, again, these guys are professionals. It doesn't matter how long you've had the experience. Doesn't matter what your title is. You're a professional. You've been at this job for quite some time. And at some given point, I would have to point toward the head coach because inevitably the responsibility falls in his lap. At that point, you call the timeout and you refocus your team and you tell your team what you want to have done. And at that point, I think he should have just called the run plays himself, said, hey, Matt, give me the best 3 run plays you have, and we're going to get out of this. We're going to get 3 1-yard plays. We're going to use up all their timeouts. We're going to kick it. And under a minute, if the great Tom Brady and Belichick can pull this off with a touchdown, an onside kick, and a field goal to tie it or win it, then that is the way the game should have ended.
All right, Cody, what do you think about the communication between those three guys?
Yeah, I'm with Coach. I think, like I mentioned this several times before about Shanahan, I was hoping that the news of him taking the 49ers job would not distract him. It didn't look like it was at all in the game. And then towards the end, just the play calling was just so head-scratching. And then you let Brady back into the game. You know, Brady's biggest comeback before this one of 25 points was, you know, his biggest comeback ever was 24. And, so you kind of count Brady out. Like, I mean, unfortunately I did because I thought this game was over. But you can tell there's a big miscommunication between, you know, the Falcons with Coach Quinn and Kyle Shanahan and Matt Ryan because that offense just didn't look the same. Even though, you know, that catch of Julio Jones on the sideline was incredible. I'm with Coach Dan Quinn should have realized that, you know, things weren't going right. He should have taken over some, you know, said, all right, we're going to run the ball here. He is the head coach. He has the final call, and he ultimately was letting Kyle Shanahan call his own plays, which is great because it's his offense, you know, the highest scoring offense in the league. But, you know, in the end, it just didn't it turned out the wrong way for them. So it was a little unfortunate, and, you know, ultimately, you know, we'll never know what's going to happen, you know, if the Falcons can, you know, get back here again next year with Coach Shanahan. But giving Brady all that time back there and running all those extra plays and just tiring out the defense, that was just it was a sad way to see how the game turned out. And you really got a feel for Dan Quinn for how the defense just ultimately collapsed in the second half, and it wasn't a good look. And your heart goes out to what happened for the Falcons.
And even though on this show I don't think this was much of an issue anyway, but can we officially put the Tom Brady debate over? He has 5 rings, all the numbers. He's going to have, in the next 2 or 3 years that he plays, he's going to have pretty much every other record Peyton broke of Brett Favre's. I mean, Tom Brady's best quarterback ever, right?
Yes.
Yes, I can't refute it.
I mean, you can attach all the gates and all the stupid crap and the cheating this and that to them all, but numbers don't lie, and neither does hardware on your finger.
Yes, and one of the things I like to add, too, just to compliment what Cody was saying earlier, you know, the difference here, in my opinion, as I look at it from a coaching perspective, again, I look at all these games objectively, guys, because that's what I do. Tom Brady expected to win this football game. Nowhere in the course of when they were down did he not feel that they didn't still have an opportunity to win. And that's the difference. And this is when you have to look at rosters and start to take into consideration what guys are used to playing in big games. Julio, see, here's my thing with one of the plays. The play that Matt Ryan throws, and Julio makes that spectacular catch in the fourth quarter to put them down where they were, Julio expected to make that play. Again, we're talking about someone that played at Alabama that's used to playing in SEC championships, big bowl games, national championships. That's that expectation, and that's that gene that you have to have to know how to get over those humps. Now, again, Matt was upset. You saw that. The body language expressed it, and as a head coach, that's when you have to start taking into consideration what players are capable of doing at that moment. So, again, you know, the reason why I say, you know, and again, it's tough to make this statement as a coach, but as a head coach, these are your responsibilities. And the reason why I say it is because somewhere down the stretch after the bye week, if you remember, Dan Quinn did not like what he saw in the defense and took those dudes back over. As a result of doing so, the defense played to the expectation that he expected them to play. So, again, going back to the play calling, when he started to see that, you know, Matt was not liking what he saw in those play calls, at that moment, you make the decision to say, okay, what do you feel that we run best? You call that unit over, you look them in their face, and you say, guys, what is it that we want to do right now? What do you feel most comfortable we can hang our hats on? In every organization, in every team, in every unit, whether it's offense or defense or special teams, has that one play that they feel most comfortable with doing. I just hate it for Atlanta, but I think sometimes you win and then sometimes you learn.
You know, I want to ask something real quick about Tom Brady. This is something that's incredible. If you go back and think about it, in the 7 times that the Patriots have been in the Super Bowl with Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, they have scored exactly 0 points in the first quarter. You have the greatest coach and the greatest quarterback of all time. In their 7 Super Bowls, they've never scored a touchdown or kicked a field goal in the first quarter of the Super Bowl, and they have 5 Super Bowls. That, to me, that's incredible that you can shut Brady out in that many first quarters, and then the guy just rolls going through the rest of the games. Coach said it. I agree that, you know, he's the greatest ever. Even as a 49er guy, a Joe Montana guy, I think even when Brady won his 4th, I don't care if he lost 2. Like, you can't really put those two Super Bowl losses on him. David Tyree made a great catch. Mario Manningham made a great catch. Brady's the greatest of all time. I don't, even if he doesn't have the stats like Peyton Manning has, he'll come close. But he's the greatest. He's still going to play for another 3 to 5 years, which is incredible. The guy takes incredible care of his body. He might have 6 or 7 Super Bowls before it's over. And I think this Patriots dynasty that they have, it's not going anywhere anytime soon. And, you know, it's only going to get better. You know, hopefully, you know, Gronk will be back next year healthy. So things are going to keep getting better for the Patriots. I'm really interested to see how many more Super Bowls Brady could have before his career is over.
Yeah, I agree. And the reason why I said I think he'll play about 3 more years, he'll catch I think he'll catch Peyton Manning in total yards and touchdown throws, even though Drew Brees is right behind them both. But in about 3 years, he'll eclipse those. So, you know, last note, I know this is Falcon Zone, but obviously a lot of people wanted to know what this show was going to do in the next few weeks over the summer. Pretty much we're going to go to a biweekly thing. We'll be off next week. We'll be back the week after that. And we'll not just talk NFL and Falcons. We'll talk a little bit of baseball, a little bit of other stuff going on. So it gives people a chance to call in and interact, and it gives us a chance to have on some other guests that don't necessarily fit our football profile. But, you know, we'll have more info on that in the next couple of weeks. But, like I said, even though this is Falcon Zone, it seems like all the great Super Bowls have one of these, and I want to give the major props out to it. Julian Edelman being able to grab that ball before it hits the ground is just almost Olympic quality. Like, I always grew up playing the game where you get in the floor and you try to hit the balloon and keep it from hitting the floor, and this is what that catch kind of reminded me of. We called it balloon blop. It's kind of a Olympic sport in our house, but for him to just pick that, it had to be a handful of centimeters away from hitting the ground there, and that Edelman catch was just unbelievable. Can we agree on that one?
I agree. But I do think that Julio Jones catch on the sideline was really good too. But Edelman to catch that ball, you know, all those guys around, all that hit the ground I think it was better than the David Tyree catch. I don't know what coach thinks, but I think that might be the greatest catch I've seen in the Super Bowl. I wouldn't say it's the greatest catch ever, but I think it's the greatest catch that I've seen in the Super Bowl.
I agree. I think it's the greatest catch I've seen in the Super Bowl. But again, if you remember, we started just talking about professionalism, and these guys are professionals. And his concentration on that ball. And one of the things that if you talk to a receiver coach, they'll always tell you that they tell the receivers to catch the ball twice. So that's exactly what he did. He caught the ball with concentration, and then he squeezed at the end to make sure that he had it secure. It was just unbelievable, but the concentration that he had. But, again, we're talking about an organization that focused on the little things. And so, I mean, what we don't see is how many times in a practice he might have made even a catch similar to that. I mean, that's just one of those things where, again, it doesn't matter how many plays you play as a professional and being one of the most elite athletes in the world as to what you do, I'm not surprised. I'm just not surprised. I mean, that catch could have gone either way, just like you spoke of earlier, Cody, with the Julio Jones catch. Again, another spectacular catch to keep them alive in that football game, but that's what professionals do. Those that hone their crafts, you see that type of play and that skill.
Exactly. And, also what professional football players do is throw forward passes and get credit for backwards passes. But on another day, we'll talk about that. Thanks for everybody that's been a part of Falcon Zone this year. We've had some great guests. Obviously, it's been great having Coach and Reggie on almost each and every week. Cody, it's been great having you on as well. I know we've all got some fun things planned for the near future, but for the coach, for Cody, for myself, Jeremy the Impact York, this has been Falcon Zone. Shout out to Reggie. We'll catch you on the other side, Reggie. We'll see you guys in a couple weeks. Bye.
By that much.